Hello and welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mitchell, he's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watchlist, all under 30 minutes, or Slim is going to do an hour-long special episode all on Halloween ends.
Maybe we should. Maybe we should go to 31 minutes this week if that's what the people want. I'm just saying.
Fill out, put it in your reviews if you want an extra minute on Halloween ends at
tag
the end of every episode.
Tag your reviews, Slim 31 minutes, hour-long Halloween ends episode, and we'll track that hashtag.
We're checking the hashtag.
So this week, Luca and Timmy are back together again. Is the world ready for Bones and All, Mitchell? Are they ready for this?
We'll find out.
We'll find out this episode. Not only that, but we'll also go through Anya Taylor-Joy's The Menu, Maria Schrader's look at the Me Too movement, She Said, and we'll also look back to see what everyone thought of last week's releases. There was a ton out. Your community reviews tagged Weekend Watchlist, and of course, our own Shuffled Watchlist later in the show, and maybe... maybe, just maybe, if we make it under 30 minutes, we'll hear from Timothy Chalamet himself this episode.
Maybe. Well, Chalamet, he is in Bones and All.
Bones and All.
Coming out this week, directed, as you said, by Luca Guadagnino on 97,000 watch
lists.
Oh my God. The people are hungry. It is coming out in limited release in theaters this weekend. The synopsis: abandoned by her father, a young woman named Marin embarks on a thousand-mile odyssey through the backroads of America, where she meets Lee, a disenfranchised drifter. But despite their best efforts, all roads lead back to their terrifying past and to a final stand that will determine whether their love can survive their otherness. Slim, a lot of people talking about Bones and All on Letterboxd. What are you? Are you craving some cannibal romance?
How many eating a double entendres can you weasel into this segment before somebody has enough? I was late to the Call Me By Your Name party, admittedly. I did see Suspiria, so folks may recognize those movie titles, and now they're back together again. So, I mean, 97,000 watch lists, I feel like that's near whatever we had for The Batman when that came out.
Yeah, it's pretty high.
This is one of those big-time releases. So it's just limited this week, but... I'm excited. I think Timothy's hair looks amazing in this movie, to be perfectly frank with you.
Very good hair in this movie. I think a lot of good looks. Good. I know, you know, our lovely co-host Mia Vecchino did dress as Chalamet in this as Halloween. Had some complaints that maybe a lot of people didn't get it because the movie's didn't come out for a month after Halloween. But around, you know, a couple weeks from now, people will be like, oh, I remember Mia was this
they're
guy
gonna
for
get
Halloween.
It.
They're going to get
They'll
it.
They'll get it eventually. What about you? Are you excited for this when this finally hits theaters and maybe streaming?
Yeah, I wasn't like super amped about this when I first heard about it. I was like, cannibal romance, I don't know. But all of the more that like word has been coming in on it, the more I've been getting excited about it, especially seeing a lot of people comparing it to Badlands, which is one of my like all-time favorite movies. I also, it's got like Chalamet and his co-leads, Taylor Russell, who I really love. She was great in Waves a few years back, and I'm excited for her to get like more of a spotlight now. But looking at like the rest of the cast list, it's just like stacked. It's got Chloe Sevigny, Michael Stuhlbarg, who was also, you know, one of my favorite people in Call Me By Your Name. Martin Scorsese's daughter, Francesca Scorsese, is in this. She was in Guadagnino's HBO series, We Are Who We Are, which I thought was like a masterpiece. You know, I mean, Luca, let's get season two going for that, please. But also, Phoenix herself from Famine of the Paradise, Jessica Harper, is in this.
What?
Very curious about what's going on with her. And your boy, Halloween Ends director, you know, David Gordon Green, in this movie, acting in this movie.
My
so, I mean,
God.
Is that's five stars for you. It's got to be, right?
I had not even heard of We Are Who We Are until you mentioned it, that HBO series.
Now, it was like barely marketed by HBO, but it is so good. Everybody's got to check that out.
It's actually on Letterboxd, just FYI, people listening. So I'm going to add that to my watch list, maybe take a peek at the old HBO Max.
4.5 stars for Mitchell.
But our own Flynn Slicker, one of our talented social media admins. I love how people just call the social, whoever like is a social media manager, the Twitter admin. Like,
or it's either admin or intern, which is like based on like the replies that we get to tweets.
Right.
It's very like diverse scale there. You are either an intern or you are literally administrating this whole thing.
Let's retire the intern phrasing, anyone listening, and we'll stick to admin or manager. That works too. But Flynn had a chat with Luca and Timothy. Believe it or not, she asked about the horror elements of it, you know, some of the gross out scenes and the reactions that some people were having while watching those moments and what they hoped people would connect with as they watch it. And Timothy had an answer. Let's hear what Timothy had to say.
The sort of horror elements of the movie and the fact that there's a cannibalistic element to it. Also, I guess when I saw Luca's movie Suspiria, there were scenes that made me jump out of my seat. But in the filming of it, which I'm most proud of and how the movie came together. It's really a love story at its heart. It's about two people that are othered by society in a time period where phones or recourse to understanding who you are was not beholden to these people in the part of the country that was totally disenfranchised in the 80s. And these two young people, by some miracle, find each other and fall in love and make each other feel that they're worthy of love in a setting that otherwise they might just be alone forever. And that's what I hope people take away the most in seeing it. But I agree with you, there's many a part in it that freaked me out.
Love that Timothy snicker at the end.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, I've definitely been seeing people getting grossed out by it. I have a friend, my friend Charlie Nash works at the Coolidge Theater in Boston, and they did like an advanced screening of it a few days back, and they had catering bring in a buffet of ribs for people to eat while watching the movie. I don't know how that went. I'll check in with Charlie, but...
Woof.
Sounds like a choice. Want to quickly spotlight some Letterboxd reviews for it before we move on. Corey Everett from Cinephile, the card game, saw the film and said, as someone who watches a lot of horror, cannibal movies still manage to make me squirm. Beautiful, brutal, and probably my favorite Guadagnino film to date. This one already feels like a cult classic.
Okay. Speaking of eating, let's eat the rich next with there The Menu, directed by Mark Mylod. 84,000 watch list. So this is another real one that's really up there. This is a limited release. Synopsis: a couple travels to a coastal island to eat at an exclusive restaurant where the chef has prepared a lavish menu with some shocking surprises. So when I saw the poster for this, and I think you probably maybe shared the same opinion that I have, that this just looked like a chef drama, you know, with Anya Taylor-Joy, Ralph Fiennes. The more and more I see that there's some maybe scary horror elements, but also comedy. Like, what's the story with this movie?
Yeah, exactly. Same as you. I saw like the poster, like the images for it, and was like, oh, I assume this is probably like the movie Burnt from 2015 that we all remember, you know, the hit Bradley Cooper movie Burnt.
Tell me you have a steel book of Burnt on your shelf right now.
I would buy one. Burnt, honestly, low-key kind of an underrated movie. Burnt, pretty good. We're getting the word out on Burnt. It's a little bit late, but the resurgence is coming for Burnt. But yeah, I thought that it was just like, yeah, like a chef, you know, a restaurant drama. And then it showed up on Letterboxd Top 50 Horror Films of 2022, ranked number 6 on average rating of all of the horror movies this year. Bones and All number 3, by the way. But so when I saw the menu on that list of the horror movies, I remember being in the Slack. I think I said to Jack, who does all of like the stats and everything for us on the Slack, I was like, is the menu a horror movie? Like, I was not prepared for that at all, which I mean, that definitely got me more intrigued than I was before, for sure.
And I wouldn't want to tell people like it's just a straight up horror movie, because I don't really know, because I haven't seen it, but I definitely am more interested to see it, just like you, based on that alone. Movie enjoyer left a review: if Succession was set in a giant saw trap. Okay.
That's a cheat. And Mark Mylod, yeah, he's known more of like a TV guy from Game of Thrones, but also, yeah, Succession, he's big on directing that. So makes sense if like the visual kind of aesthetic style of the menu is Succession, then I'm very in for that. But it's also Anya Taylor-Joy, of course. I feel like a lot of those 84,000 watch lists are Anya Taylor-Joy heads out there. Shoji left a review that said, you know it's about to be fire when Anya Taylor-Joy plays a ginger, which all the Queen's Gambit fans out there could definitely, you know, we're back in for a treat there. Flynn Also, Flynn, who you mentioned with Bones et al., Flynn said, Anya Taylor-Joy punching someone? Sign me up.
Wow. A rare... Flynn left a star rating for that? A rare Flynn star rating?
3.5 stars.
This was back in September. That might have been before she made a switch. Maybe just no rating and only 5 stars. We'll have to get some answers from Flynn on that.
Flynn's coming on next week.
And we might hear from Flynn later in the show about her star rating changes.
Let's head into, we've got a packed week, lots of new releases. So let's dive into our next one. She Said, directed by Maria Schrader on 16,000 watchlists. This is opening wide in theaters. The synopsis for this one, New York Times reporters Megan Toohey and Jodi Kantor break one of the most important stories in a generation, a story that helped launch the Me Too movement and shattered decades of silence around the subject of sexual assault in Hollywood. We've got a journalism movie here, very important story. Slim, how are you feeling about She Said? Are you excited to see this one?
Oh, boy. You know, I think this is one of those movies where you like, it's okay to not be excited about it, but you can be excited in a way that this is an important movie for people to see. Because it does follow a very important topic over the last few years. I think they ended up, these reporters turned it into a book, and now the book is now this movie. Gemma, soundtrack doing a lot of emotional work for an audience that needs absolutely no help whatsoever feeling things about this piece of shit and the pieces of shit who enabled him. So yeah. I think that Gemma hits the nail on the head, at least with that review.
Yeah, Fran Hoffner, recent guest on the Letterboxd 4 Faves show with Gemma and Mia. Fran left a review saying, totally fine, if not a little didactic, which is sort of the thing about journalism movies in general. I suspect folks who have kept up with the story since 2017, if not prior, will feel like they're being smacked over the head with a rolled up newspaper. But the intended audience is likely people for whom this story is unknown or held little water, making the case that this type of inside baseball reporting matters in a bigger sense. Does it pull that off? I don't know, which I think is an interesting perspective to have on it, where, because I know that there are some people who are like, you know, this maybe feels a little bit too soon. Like, we know like this story, but I think historically it does. There are, you know, so many people outside of people like us who follow everything that's going on in the movie business who like know this story. There are people who maybe don't know it that well, and people 50 years from now who maybe won't be as tuned into the Weinstein of it all and everything and know all the like minute details of it, who could get a lot of education from this story and seeing how it all kind of came about.
Yeah, I was thinking about that recently too with the Twitter stuff happening. Like, I feel like we're very online with a capital O. And I wonder, like, does the world at large, does like our aunt and uncles know what's happening currently with Twitter? Like, will Twitter be around? And it's just, it's interesting to look at like some of these current events that we're so glued into in certain communities, but outside of those bubbles, you know, movies like this are necessary, really. We have some movies in our lightning round before we get rolling. Well, this is the biggest show we've ever done, I think.
Biggest.
I've been looking at the numbers, and this is the biggest.
And 5 extra minutes about Halloween Ends at the end of it.
EO, directed by Jerzy Skolimowski, 13,000 watch list from Janus Films and Sideshow. The world is a mysterious place when seen through the eyes of an animal. Io, a gray donkey with melancholic eyes, meets good and bad people in his life's path, experiences joy and pain, endures the wheel of fortune randomly turn his luck into disaster and his despair into unexpected bliss. But not even for a moment does he lose his innocence. I watched the trailer for this and I almost started crying like right away. I'll be totally honest with you.
The reviews are popping about love for EO. I'm excited for this movie because it's like sort of loosely inspired by Robert Bresson's film Ohazar Balthazar, which is like a movie that I adore. So I'm pumped for it for that. But like the reviews are just all about this donkey. Ella Kemp left a review that just says, I would protect EO, listen to EO, cherish EO, support EO, pray to EO, love this here donkey named EO. And that's it. If you look at the Letterboxd reviews, you're pretty much getting a lot of that.
The Inspection, The Last Thing We'll Spotlight, directed by Elegance Bratton on 6,000 watch lists. This is distributed by A24. Ellis French is a young gay black man rejected by his mother and with few options for his future, decides to join the Marines. doing whatever it takes to succeed in a system that would cast him aside. But even as he battles deep-seated prejudice and the grueling routines of basic training, he finds unexpected camaraderie, strength, and support in this new community, giving him a hard-earned sense of belonging that will shape his identity and forever change his life. This is another trailer that I saw in theaters that I really wanted to see this as soon as I saw it.
Yeah, this one's coming out in limited release this week, and then it comes out wide on December 2nd, so more people will definitely be able to see it soon. We've got some reviews from, you know, festival screenings and everything. Joe Reed left a review that said, "To be honest, I'd have been maybe even more into a movie about French's pre-Marine's life, but this is good, and Jeremy Pope is great, who plays the lead in it. Here's hoping Gabrielle Union, who plays his mother in it, follows the Bring It On alum playing mom to a queer kid trained to a supporting actress nomination, following in the footsteps of Kirsten Dunst last year for Power of the Dog. Let's get all of those Bring It On alums. Eliza Dushku, where is her Oscar nomination?" That's what that's what we're really asking for.
Eliza, come home. We need you. Please come home.
Jesse Bradford, my swim fan boy. Let's get a hit. The Bring It On cast needs more buzz just in every movie these days, I think.
What's the letter for, Ben Cronin? Swimming? You any good?
Wow. Wow. Welcome to the swim fan episode.
So should we start a swim fan retrospective podcast? Every week we watch Swim Fan again and we discuss it.
The Patreon is just us doing Swim Fan with, we just bring on a guest every week to talk about Swim Fan.
And its impact in their life.
Well, let's take a quick, before we get into our own, shuffling our own watch list and what we got going, let's take a quick look back at some of the big films that you and Mia talked about last week. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, 3.8 average on Letterboxd after its first week in release. It's obviously blowing up the box office. We've got plenty of reviews on Letterboxd. I wanted to shout out Kev's review, which I really love, that said, "A lot of this movie really worked for me, but when the guy with Southland Tales in his top four thinks your movie is too busy, you've got a serious problem."
Old Kev up to his old tricks in that Wakanda Forever review. 3.8 average. So yeah, I saw it last week. He gave it 3.5 stars. Some really beautiful shots in the movie that I loved.
Yeah.
Falling for Christmas came out last week. 2.5 average on Netflix. So a little lower than anticipated, but maybe right around the sweet spot for direct-to-streaming Christmas rom-com movies. I don't know what you think, Mitchell.
Yeah, so I did watch my partner Sam, who works with us here, and I watched Falling for Christmas. We were very excited for Falling for Christmas, watched it the moment that we could. It's fine. I feel like, so, I mean, neither of us are people who really get into the, like, Netflix and, like the Hallmark, like, kind of Christmas movies. So we're coming into this with like the neophyte, you know, understanding of what these movies are. And it threw me off a little bit with just how like flagrantly phony it kind of is. Like, just, you can have a shot of, you know, your boy Chord Overstreet. It's just like a close up of him. And like it's like clearly green screen on just a close up of him. And it's like a little bit like disconcerting. But I think that people who are into this kind of thing would really like it. And definitely, I mean, the main reason that we watch this as opposed to all of the, you know, 50,000 other movies like this that come out every year is because we're big Lindsay Lohan fans. Exciting for her to be back. And I feel like a lot of people in the reviews you see like are getting a lot of that, like Lindsay definitely being the thing to sell this. Aeon left a review that said, "All the formula you'd expect from a holiday movie with extra added charm. Welcome back, Linz." Could not agree with that more. Welcome back.
I meant to say this in our company Slack, but I was in, I think it was Peacock or Paramount has like quote unquote live channels that you can just, it's just
Paramount
like
does, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Hallmark has like a channel, whatever. So I was just poking around and it came onto a Christmas movie starring Luke McFarlane from Bros. And it was an ice skating scene. I couldn't believe, I couldn't believe it. We're like, what are the chances? I mean, he's maybe done a ton of them. So the chances are probably maybe pretty high.
Yeah, but he has said that he did. He's done a lot of those. And he, I mean, the way that that man looks, it makes sense that he gets cast in a lot of those things. He is exactly the Chord Overstreet type.
I was vilified on Twitter for my pronunciation of Chord Overstreet, by the way, thanks to Mitchell. But The Fabelmans limited release last week, 4.2 average. There's a lot of Oscar buzz. Maybe it's in the bag. Who knows? But Scott left a review. "Men will literally make a $40 million movie instead of going to therapy."
Wow. I'm very excited. Very excited for The Fablemans. Although Mia said it's his best movie in, I can't even remember how
many. I think she said 20 years.
20 years. The Adventures of Tintin shaming on that statement. I don't know how I feel about that. But
Mia probably didn't see Tintin. She's playing L.A. Noir. She's too busy to watch The Adventures of Tintin.
Honestly,
fair.
It's reasonable. It's a good game.
Should we go into our watch list now? Every week, we look at our own watch list, our ever-growing watch list. We shuffle them, so it kind of helps us get that number down. We have to watch it before we meet the next week. And last week, I shuffled and I got The Ritual from David Bruckner, who did The Night House and more recently the new Hellraiser. And this had been on my watch list for a while. It looked like a bunch of dudes going camping and it's a horror movie. So I was like, oh, okay, let's see that. And that's essentially it. The plot. It starts out with a bunch of dudes talking about going camping one night at the bar, and two of those friends eventually go to a convenience store and they walk in on it getting held up. One of them gets killed. Fast forward down the line, they finally do go on that camping trip after that happens, eventually down the line. But one of them gets injured. They have to find this rundown house to try to just stay the night as they're trying to get back home. And it's like a ritualistic house. Like the trees outside of the house all have like insignias on it. There's almost like an altar inside of the house, but they're so cold. They're like, we have to stay here. We have to just leave in the morning. Let's just get through the night. There's a really eerie scene that happens the next morning in the house. And they eventually just stumble upon some creepy, like the title suggests, ritual. I liked it a lot. I liked it. This might be my favorite David Bruckner. I thought his other stuff was okay. Visually, some really cool stuff. Creature design is off the charts. So I was pretty happy with this shuffle last week.
Yeah, I really dig The Ritual. It's one of those movies. It's like very folk horror. And I think like the similar to a lot of movies that are about like guys going camping in the woods or like a setup similar to that. I feel like it gets less interesting and less creepy the more stuff is like actually revealed and you like understand. Yeah. Like the third act didn't work for me as well as like the setup kind of stuff. The scene that you mentioned there is definitely my favorite scene in the movie. And yeah, like super chilling. I love The Night House. The Night House, a movie that like literally I've
the
said
The Night House,
like,
also another movie where it gets like really crazy in the third act. Like there's a lot happening in that third act of The Night House as well.
And it's more, it's like The Ritual, the stuff that really like sinks under my skin and kept me up at night is the more like suggestive stuff rather than like them revealing things.
Mm-hmm. What did you shuffle and get?
Yeah, my last time I got Breaking Away, the Peter Yates movie from the 70s about a bunch of boys in high school riding bikes. It was pretty good. One of the main boy gets really obsessed with Italy and like Italians. Like he wants to race the Italians because they're like the most like elite cyclists in the world and they're coming to their town. And it's like all based on a true story and stuff. But I was just like a little bit like, he starts pretending to be Italian. He starts wooing a girl by like pretending that he's Italian and he has like a different name and he talks in an Italian accent and he just like speaks Italian. And I'm like, what are we doing with this part of it? But like the stuff about like these boys kind of coming into their own, especially the main boy's relationship with his father, I thought was really like well done. And there's like a scene towards the end where the boy kind of gets his heart broken in a way and realizes like that people are just kind of like messed up and evil in the world. And it's like a moment of like a loss of innocence kind of moment. And he goes home to his father and he's like, I didn't realize that like people could lie. I just didn't know. And his father was like, well, now you do. And it like, it really like that got me. Wow. And it like, it made me tear up in a way that I was like, oh, I did not realize how invested I was in this movie until now. But yeah, it's pretty good. Jackie Earle Haley, as you and I talked about when I shoveled it, he weirdly looks exactly the same as he does now. He just looks like he put a wig on, which is kind of disconcerting. But
imagine him and young Matt Dillon in the same place at the same time. Would the universe collapse on itself?
Dennis Quaid is also in that, like a really early like Dennis Quaid. I'm like, I'm just seeing all of these like young versions of these guys that I'm used to seeing as like old versions of themselves, but they look very similar, but I don't know. It's a
Dennis
lot
Quaid has a six pack in this backdrop. Are you
Dennis
seeing this?
Quaid,
my
Dennis
God.
Quaid is like topless for like most of the movie. And it's like, yeah, it's creepy. It's just
the opposite effect of Jackie or Haley in a wig.
let's check out what some other people, you know, some people shuffling their own watch lists with us, tagging them weekend watch lists. Keep doing that, please. I wanted to shout out Ian's review of the game, who referenced something that maybe people could hear a little bit more about when you and Gemma talk with Ryan Connolly on the next episode of Four Faves next week. Ian says, maybe it's the Slimfluence talking, but the game, best Fincher ever? Question mark?
That's a very, very good question. Is it the best Fincher ever? I might agree with you. It's my favorite Fincher. When was the last time you watched the game?
Yeah, I haven't seen the game since I was like a teenager, which was like right off of the back of like watching, you know, like I was like 15 and saw like 7 for the first time in Fight Club or whatever. So I was like super obsessed with them. And then I watched the game and it's a very different kind of movie, but you kind of go into it expecting it to be like Fincher's other movies. So I thought it was fine, but wasn't like crazy about it. But it's one of those ones that I feel like has gotten more and more love as the years go on. And I picked up the Criterion of it like a few months back and definitely want to give it a rewatch because I feel like it's one of those ones that like these days, I don't really like Fight Club as much as I used to when I was a teenager, right. But I feel like I would like the game a lot more than I used to like it.
I'm eagerly awaiting that review. Angel left a review for Smile, which is now on Paramount Plus, Paramount Army Rise Up. Very pleasantly surprised by how good this was. I get that it's not the most original concept, but I thought it had something interesting to say, which is more than I usually feel about a lot of horror flicks. All the jump scares made this a really fun theater experience. Amanda and I actually watched Smile last night. I liked it too. I gave it 3 stars. Visually, some really eerie stuff. I also love the sound design too for Smile.
I'm excited to check it out for sure. It's one of those ones that like, when the, you know, first ads for it were dropping, I was like, what is this? But then like the more people were talking about it, where I was like, oh, I guess I should see this.
Yeah.
I wanted to also shout out quickly Amanda Wheeler's review of My Cousin Vinny. Amanda said, I'm so glad I got this film when I shuffled. I love it. I especially love my queen, Marissa Tomei, which My Cousin Vinny, Marissa Tomei, all timers. I also just love that Amanda tagged it as watching it with her mom, which I feel like My Cousin Vinny is like such a perfect mom movie. And I just love when people tag like who they watched like their movies with, especially if it's like your mom or your like dad or whatever. Like, I just think that's really cool and nice to
see. I gotta remember to do that with when I watch it with Amanda. I think I started.
I started doing it when I watch movies with Sam. Yeah, and it's really cool just to see like the full, like you look in your diary and see like every movie you watch with a person.
It's use
really
cool. The tags. But now let's use our watch list. Let's head back over there and shuffle it again. I'm gonna filter by stream only, make it easy for me. And then I'm going to sort by shuffle. And the first movie that appears, I have to watch. Oh, God. 2.0 average, streaming on Tubi, Pluto, Crackle, and Roku. Black Eagle, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. There are no armies. There is no glory. This fight is one on one. Oh my God, what a poster. I don't even think there's anything more to say about it, but I'm excited to watch. Eric Carson directed 1988.
Oh, wow. That is a hard flex. That is just like his flex looks like a whole separate part of the movie. All right. I shuffled and I got Clear Cut. From 1991, synopsis, when a lawyer loses an appeal to stop a logging company from clear-cutting Native American land, Arthur, an Indian militant, drags him and the kidnapped logging mill manager into the forest. The lawyer's empty talk about how the company's greed should be punished is put into brutal action by Arthur, who tortures the manager in allegorical ways, mimicking what loggers do to the forest. That is a interesting synopsis.
This is actually on my watch list too. I think I added it when there was some buzz in a Discord for a podcast that I listened to, Bat and Spider. This was only available on like YouTube for a while, but it's on Shudder and Tubi now.
Kayla Janice, who we talked to on this week's episode of the Four Faves show, she put it in the Severin Films folk horror box set that came out last year. So when I picked that up, this was like one of the ones that I was most interested in seeing because it's got great reviews on Letterboxd. Graham Greene plays the lead in it. I'm really excited to check this out. I'm really
love this poster. This is one of the most VHS looking posters that I can think of
right now.
Saran wrapped in the bin, ready to be taken home. Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by the Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mitchell, Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And if you had the time, maybe consider rating the show on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps spread the word about the show.
Thanks to our crew, Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. And most of all, thanks to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. Slim, here's Halloween Ends. Let's go.
You got to pay up. I'm not just giving it out for free.
That's on the Patreon.